I can't remember if we came up with this memory, but it's like you're, you know, you get married and it's like you're just locked in prison with this person.
The shape of the prison is still the same. Nothing's changed.
Yeah. You make it sound so romantic.
Tell him the burrata story.
And he was just eating this like burrata and toast like this, and it was like spilling out, and he's like talking really frantically, and like, and I was just like, this guy's like cute. He's clearly smart, but like, I don't totally understand what's going on. And then he went to like a Barry's class afterwards, and I was like, I may never see that person again. Like, I don't really, that was, there's like a little hurricane that just like zipped in and like zipped out.
Why'd you say yes?
Yeah. Like, weird is interesting, right? Weird is intriguing.
Well, we've been talking about doing this for years.
Yeah.
So you guys have been teasing me for quite a while. So I'm glad we can finally make this happen. Thank you.
I think it was Nadia's idea originally, or no?
I think it was your. If we go far enough back, you have a tweet about doing this somewhere where we talked about it a long time ago.
I remember. You and I were just going to do it ourselves at some point, and they were like, oh, but then Eric should just interview us, it'll be easier. Yeah.
There must be a common conversation you guys have. If you go back far enough, there's a tweet.
It's true.
Other than me, summer 2020, panic deleting Zach's tweets, which I mostly regret.
Those tweets might actually not be there anymore.
Yeah, sad.
So you guys have been together almost 6 years. Your relationship and marriage has gotten better as you've been together. You have a beautiful baby. What have you learned that other, whether it's about partner selection or making your marriage great, that other people can learn from?
Make marriage great again.
Now's the time.
You go first. I don't know.
One-liners.
He said be my one-liners.
He's got a slogan and that's it.
Yeah, exactly. That's all I've got.
I think the main thing that comes to mind for me with how to make marriages great again is just like putting in a lot less work on the things I thought I had to do a lot more work on. What has worked really well for us, I think, is just sort of like having this baseline level of trust that we have each other's best interests in heart and not trying to over communicate every single thing. And I think a lot of advice you get is always about over communication and always checking in with each other, always asking how things are going, whatever. And I've just found, I think in like prior relationships that can backfire sometimes, because then you're kind of looking for things to talk about all the time. And I think what has worked really nicely in our relationship is, like, honestly, sometimes you just don't need to bring up every single little thing. And just, I know, maybe Dylan's laughing because I am. If everyone is going to bring something up, it's always going to be me.
We actually, like, recently went through this. We're like, we almost never bring things up. But then I think kind of for the fun of it, the other week, I brought up an argument that we had at, like, month 6 of the relationship. And it was the, should I get to keep the money from the mattress or should you?
Oh, my God.
And so what's funny is, like, I've never wanted to bring it back up. But I kind of, you know, did.
Well, I was going to ask you what you guys fight about. So money under the mattress, is that really, you guys found money under the mattress and you were like, who should keep it?
Well, this is a very Dylan story. When Dylan and I started dating, we were still, you know, I was living in my apartment, he was living in his house. Dylan was just getting things off the ground with 8Sleep at the time.
Maybe like a year into investing.
So he was very, very much an evangelist of 8Sleep and decided he was going to get me an 8Sleep mattress. But he never asked if I wanted my own mattress or, you know, my original mattress. He just replaced it.
Without your consent.
Without my consent.
She like definitely like agreed to having me sleep.
Okay, whatever. I mean, it wasn't complaining. It's a nice mattress, right? Yeah. Great mattress. Yeah. Great,
but like they like as a part of
sponsor this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Lean into that. But then when the time came for us to move in together, then he decided,
Part of it is that 8Sleep at the time had like a professional installation service. And so two burly men come in and they're like, what do you want to do with your old mattress? Like, you know, get it out of here. And so they take the mattress out of here.
No, that's actually not what happened.
Okay, well, I wasn't there. What did the two burly men do?
Shared reality is really important.
I didn't really have a choice. Yeah, they took away my mattress. I was left without my original mattress. I only had this nice, fancy, wonderful upgraded mattress. However, then we moved together.
And then like 3 months later, we were moving in together. And so she no longer needed this mattress. And so she was like, well, what should I do with this? And so obviously, like, I pinged a couple friends that I knew had shown interest in 8Sleep before.
I never asked what to do.
Okay, maybe. I don't know. I just knew the mattress was there. And I was like, well, we should, like, make some money off this. So I should, like, sell the mattress, right? And so I, like, texted a couple friends and I got a buddy to, like, buy it for, like, $1,000 basically. It was, like, way lower than retail, but it was, like, whatever. They're, like, getting this mattress that only had
how much money did Nadia get for her original mattress?
Zero.
In fact, Nadia did not even know about this transaction.
But she didn't try to sell it. She had the opportunity. She knew that this mattress upgrade was coming.
I would have sold my My original mattress was a nice mattress. I would have sold it.
Okay, but you would have, but you didn't for some reason.
I didn't because someone didn't love it anyway. So this is
a conflict that came up.
Exactly. And I thought it should be, I think I offered 50-50. I was like, I should, you know, get half.
Well, you never originally offered anything. Let's be clear.
Okay, maybe
that was some revisionist history.
Well, I felt like I put in all the effort. I got her the mattress. I found the buyer of the mattress. I felt like I was like, oh, I'm just helping you get rid of the mattress.
At no point was I ever consulted for any of this.
I think I didn't even tell you that I sold it.
No, that's a lie. $1,000
And then like it came up later and I was like, oh yeah, I got $1,000 for the mattress. She was like, you got $1,000 from my mattress? That's
behind
my $1,000. And I was like, no, it's my $1,000.
I really appreciate you sharing some of your biggest conflicts during the podcast.
Yeah,
exactly. Okay, so that's an example.
Oh yeah, you brought this up recently.
Of an issue that came up.
I don't even know. I think I was just having fun that day and I wanted to bring it up.
Okay, so the lesson is repress everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, but it's like a fine line though between like, it's not that I'm saying we shouldn't talk about issues when they come up. It's just like a lot of little things that you think you need to talk about, you don't, or you can just find more constructive ways to express them. But I
like, what's the more you could talk about it with other people, or you?
Are we allowed to talk about how your friends tried to revolt from?
No,
we're not allowed to talk about that.
Nope.
Okay, they staged an intervention.
No, we're not talking about that.
On the Delian project in general.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're leaving it at that. We can't. If we speak any more, then it'll have to be cut. But with that level, we're allowed. Yeah.
There's something about being a long-term relationship where I want to aspire to always waking up every day being just like psyched that I'm next to this person and have that be, that is the baseline. The baseline is you wake up and you're just like, I am thrilled to be with this person. And then once you feel that way and you're kind of leaning into that feeling of just excitement and gratitude, then all the other little stuff just doesn't feel that important. So,
which is on that. So how do you know whether something is worth bringing up or what is a more constructive way of if you're not if you don't bring it up, but you're actually like feel something, how do you deal with that?
I do actually want to mention a point to the earlier question, although this one is also, you know, sort of valuable. I think, you know, one of the things that I remember thinking in the first sort of 3 or 4 months of the relationship was up until then, every person that I dated, I always felt like there was like work that needed to happen in order for the relationship to continue to succeed. And sometimes it was on my end, sometimes on there, and sometimes it was like the combination of the two, especially in the last couple of relationships before Nadia. And I think a part of it was like a symptom of San Francisco dating culture and the default like social and political and economic views of people there. I was just so far off from that. And I felt like I needed to work in order to be a great partner. I felt like I needed to work towards the consensus San Francisco view.
Because they were woke and you were based?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a multitude of dimensions of that, but yes, that is like one of the, you know, sort of dimensions. And I felt like with Nadia, I was like, oh, I don't need to like work on this. I can just like be myself. And she likes me for like being myself. And I remember that being like one of the things that, you know, sort of really, you know, sort of struck me, which is, I think, related to this point of like, you know, the like over communication, et cetera. I didn't feel like I needed to be like, oh, well, like this thing that like I said that offended you, which like I did offend her a lot in the beginning. She like cried a lot in the first 3 months. And I remember we had a conversation at one point where I was like, I promise, like, you're just going to get like used to me.
you're not like all changed.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, eventually you will cry less.
It was true. I did cry less.
Yeah. I was like, you'll just become desensitized to these things that I do.
But did you change at all?
No.
Okay.
I think I can't tell that I've changed when people tell me that I've changed, but it's probably the best version of change. Yes. Is like, you know.
All your friends say you're such a nice guy.
I don't think I've changed. Stop. I feel the exact same. But then you're talking about like when to, you know, I think this is the thing that we're probably worst at is like when is something at the level, there are times where it eventually reaches to something that it should be brought up.
Yeah.
And I think we're not very good at that.
Yeah. Of what? Figure out how to.
When. It's like we have like, once every 5 months, we have like an extremely important conversation, but it happens over like pillow talk kind of randomly. Yeah. And mostly, obviously, you end up, you know.
mostly it's your shit.
Well, no, it's not that it's your shit. Sometimes it's things that I'm doing, obviously, but like you're the one to be like, this is now at
I'm
a time where. it is time to talk about it.
I don't know. I mean, I think everyone has an intuition of like, what are your non-negotiables or what are the things where you just like, I need to have this thing done or whatever. And there's a time and a place to bring that up. So I don't really have like a clean, perfect answer to it. I just.
Mine early on was that you had to learn how to ski. That was my only non-negotiable.
Just grudging up
all the grudges.
All the grudges.
Which you did do. And I think you felt a lot of pressure too, which is kind of funny. Like she was like, because I had told her, I was like, my family over Christmas and like holidays, all we do is like, we like ski together. And I remember this, like, I don't even remember the exact conversation. We had some conversation where you're like, I feel like I like have to look like.
Yeah, it's really
succeed.
Hard learning how to ski as an adult. Let
it'd
me
be
tell
deal breaker
you.
For me.
Yeah.
Let me tell you. Yeah. Very hard. Very hard. And then I learned how to ski and then done kind of stop skiing.
This year, then we moved to Miami and like started kite surfing and stuff. Yeah. So, but yeah, although we'll be going skiing in, you know, 9 days.
But so basically what you're saying is a lot of it was handled on the front end because you picked the right partner, basically. So you didn't have a lot of fights that you had.
I think there's like also just a baseline level of commitment where you just like.
You not only picked right, but you committed.
Yeah. It's like.
Which brought a lot of security to the relationship.
I can't remember if we came up with this metaphor or someone else told us this metaphor when we got married, but it's like you get married and it's like you're just locked in prison with this person. And
sounds great.
But in a good way, though, like you have to figure stuff out when you're in there. And if you take this mentality of like, I'm in it, I'm here, and there's no other choice, then all the other little stuff falls away. Like, I don't think there are a lot of ways in which Di and I are not the most obvious fits for each other. I mean, with the skiing thing, like Di always thought he was going to marry some
ski person,
professional skier, which I am not. And, you know, like, I mean, there are a lot of ways in which we're really different, but I think you just have this mentality of like, I'm in it and I'm going to figure it out. And that just brings a lot of simplicity and clarity. And I think a lot of people really, really overthink that part.
Well, let's talk about that. Because Dylan, it feels like you knew pretty early, like you were committed pretty early. Like, I remember, you know, now you were mentioning that Dylan was more eager to be committed or be say, hey, we're like boyfriend and girlfriend before Nadia was.
Yes.
So talk about like when you knew that Nadia was going to be your girl, that Nadia was the one for you. And like, what was that process like?
I think those are two different, you know, sort of questions. On like the boyfriend, girlfriend thing, I think a part of it maybe is a commitment. A part of it is also just like slightly, it was like the cultural thing of like, I just have never somebody that has like, you know, I've either had extremely casual relationships where it's like, we don't do dinners, we don't do anything other than like.
Like, what's your name? I don't even know.
Yeah, exactly. Like, definitely, you know, a decent number of those. Or I have like a committed girlfriend. Yeah. That's it. The idea of this like, you know, San Francisco archetype of like, oh, for like months on end, you're like in this state where like, you know that the other person's also seeing other people or like the poly. Yeah. I was like, that is just like not for me. So the boyfriend girlfriend thing, I think, was more that where I was like, if we're going to be doing this, like, you know, I think it was like 3 weeks in or 2 weeks in. I was like, if we want to continue to go on dates, this needs to be like a thing because I don't do this like, you know, taking people to dinner if it's not, you know, clearly, you know, sort of committed.
Yeah.
That's different than like the, you know, sort of the one. I don't think that was ever like a, you know, sort of like, you know, sort of one moment, you know, sort of per se. For me, I think, and especially in relation to like, you know, sort of for, I feel like the guy, it's like the proposal, you know, sort of moment is the like, you know, solidification of the, you know, sort of one in some ways. And for me, that felt like it was something where like it popped into my head, you know, sort of once, and then you sort of don't think about it for a little while, and then it pops into your head again like a month later, and then the next time it's like 2 weeks later, and then the next time it's like a week later, and then the next time it's like every day, and then at some point you like just, you know, sort of, I think, you know, get comfortable. And that's how, at least for me, any major decision I feel like I've made, I like flirt with the idea, you know, sort of first, but then I know that it's like time to make the decision once, like, you know, I've like thought about it and I'm thinking about it basically like every single day.
And you workshopped it on Clubhouse.
Oh, and I workshopped it on Clubhouse. Yeah, there's like 12,000 people that knew that I was going to propose before Nadia knew. And so they all kept it secret. Credit to those 12,000 people. But at least for me, the first like, you know, moment of that was actually very San Francisco story. We got robbed in San Francisco. The cops didn't do anything. Robbed. I got robbed. I think you weren't living with me yet at the time. Cops, of course, you know, sort of don't do anything. I was just like very, you know, it's just like it took me some time to come to this realization because you like come home, you're like, oh, weird, like the house is a little messy. And you're like, oh, but like my like laptop that was like sitting over there is like missing. So I must have like misplaced. Anyways, at some point I realized that they like, stole a bunch of my stuff. And like one of the things that I was very bummed out about, I was like, I literally had just bought a Switch and was like excited to like play on my Switch, et cetera. And I remember Nadia like 2 or 3 days later, you know, sort of saw me and like handed me a Switch.
Aww.
And I just remember just like breaking down, crying, being like, thank you so much. Like, you know, this is like, cause it breaks your like sense of safety, your sense of just like, you know, so there's so many things that like breaks when like somebody's like violated your place and like taking all these things, something about like recognizing that and like, you know, replacing the thing that like, you know, I was very, you know, sort of frustrated by. It was very, very nice.
That's so sweet.
But yeah, it was one of the first moments. But there was
even on the front end.
Yeah.
Was Nadia someone you expected to be your girlfriend? Like what sort of made it obvious to you? Like, hey, we should date.
Well, I feel like, you know, as a, you know, sort of guy in San Francisco, you keep track of like the 12 attractive women that, you know, exist in the city.
And so, just keep tabs on
these. Yeah, keep tabs of like, you know, what they're doing and, you know, how things are going. So anyways, we'd like, you know, sort of met very briefly in like 2012 and she had like, you know, been added to that. At the time, the list was like 3 and she was like the 4th that I added to the list. And over time, that list grew to like, you know, sort of 12 over the course of like a decade. And then, yeah, at some point, like, heard through, you know, sort of the grapevine that, like, you know, she was, you know, sort of single after, you know, sort of dating somebody for a long time. And so for me, at least, the first, you know, sort of like, do I take this person on a date, you know, was just, you know, are they on that list of 12? Yeah, I don't know if there was, like, an obvious, like, moment on, like, the girlfriend thing. I just felt like, yeah, I don't know.
Maybe.
But that was way after the, like, boyfriend-girlfriend thing. Yeah.
Nadia, what was your early...
When did you say I love you for the first time, Nadia?
Nope. Skipping that
part. Oh, we're skipping that story.
When did I what?
Well, this guy Delian comes into your life. Was it obvious to you at first?
No, what was your experience not at like? All. Delian was definitely not.
What about it wasn't obvious, I mean?
Well, it was just
total
so,
package.
It was just...
Yeah.
It was just so random. I mean, yeah, we had, we were like one of each other's earliest Twitter follows, I think. You know, I vaguely, he has such a weird name. Like, I remember it like stuck in my head that he was a person I'd met in San Francisco very early on, but not really thought about. And I randomly met two of his roommates in the span of a few weeks. And so, and they'd mentioned their other roommate, Delian. I was like, oh, that guy who gave me a ride home once. Like, you know, super random. But yeah, then he had like reached out and we'd met up for the first time. And,
which there's always a debate about whether or not that was a date.
Yeah, I didn't say it was a date. I just said we met up for the first time.
It was an ambiguous date.
It was an ambiguous date. And I just heard, yeah, I mean, it was, I just didn't know what to make of
it. Tell him the burrata story.
I just heard, yeah, you ordered this like bread. Adelian loves burrata. We were at Tartini Made a Factory and really good bread. And he ordered like this toast with the burrata and he just like, we were just having like a very like deep, but like if you get Delian going, he starts talking super frenetically and super fast. So he's like talking really fast, but all this like weird stuff that you don't usually talk about when you meet someone. And he was just eating this like burrata and toast like this, and it was like spilling out. And he was like talking really frantically, and like, and I was just like, this guy's like cute. He's clearly smart, but like I don't totally understand what's going on. And then he went to like a Barry's class afterwards. And I was like, I may never see that person again. Like, I don't really, there's like a little hurricane that just like zipped in and like zipped out. But then we did end up going on an actual date after that. Cause I don't know.
Oh, like 4 days later, 5 days later. Why'd you say yes?
Yeah. I really like weird guys. Like weird is interesting, right? Weird is intriguing. And so I was intrigued by the weirdness of whatever.
What were we doing on our first date?
Whatever
now,
that was. Well, the date part is maybe not the important part.
Well, yeah, but it's helpful context, you know, but then
is it
after.
Helpful context?
I think it's just,
I don't feel like we need all the context.
Okay, we don't need all the context, fine.
But something that did endear me to him on this first date, we did a, you know, normal first date thing, but we went back to his place afterwards.
To cook dinner, because the date place didn't have dinner.
Yes. Our dinner restaurant plans fell through.
Yeah.
We ended up just buying groceries and we were like, we're just going to cook dinner at home. And Delian is parking his car in the driveway and it's like one of these San Francisco houses, like the Victorians.
Type,
where you like walk up to the top. So I'm standing at the top of the steps, Delian is parking down below and I'm waiting for him. And these three people approach me. It's a guy with two children and they're like bounding up the stairs and they're like, hello, so excited to meet you. And I was like, who are these people? It turns out it's Delian's dad and his two younger siblings.
We're visiting for the weekend, but I told them, I was like, you guys need to like hide and go watch a movie or something so I can take this girl on this date. But then they got home earlier than expected.
And
happened to perfectly run into her in the moment.
So you met Delian's family on her first date.
Yes. And they were all there.
Yes.
It was a very, I think what kind of flipped for me of, okay, first, like he's weird, but he's intriguing. Then it was like, okay, we had some fun together. But then I think seeing how close Delian was with his family was a really endearing thing that you just don't see much of in San Francisco dating, especially. I met his mom like very soon after that. I think the first time that we like started officially dating, she came over. We were, you know, doing a whole Easter thing together. He's just like clearly very, very grounded in his family. And to me, that was a sign of commitment and someone who's just, yeah, I don't know. I found that just really, really nice. So
I made her do math worksheets on her first date.
About that. I wasn't allowed to eat dinner until I completed these math problems and I got them wrong.
Sixth grade math counts. Come on.
I feel like Delian changed your sort of conception of what you were attracted to or what your type was or what would be good for you based on previous people or people that you dated or thought you might be attracted to. Like, what did you learn about sort of
I think fit? It goes back to the prison thing again of
you don't want to be in prison with a nerd.
You are in it. But you know what?
But he was willing to go to prison as another people were.
Maybe a better analogy is, you know, people have there are people you can be very close friends with and love, but you don't want them to be your roommates, right? And it's just like, you don't necessarily want to deal with like that kind of stuff together. And I think there's something similar with like the prison thing or whatever, but I've definitely dated a lot of people where it's, you know, we have all this chemistry in very specific dimensions that are really nice and fun and it's very engaging. But in the end, it's like, if you're getting married, you're having kids, you're raising a family, you're dealing with a lot of practical stuff that is not always glamorous. You need someone who can actually just deal with that with you. And that's a very different way of thinking about relationships. And we don't talk about that very often. I think we usually just talk about the, you know, look for someone who shares your same interests and or really generic traits like smart and funny and
or someone who'd be like the most fun weekend or something.
Yeah. And I think we're just and then we think that, oh, if you just have a really fun time with someone and they're smart and funny and they check all the boxes, then eventually just kind of morphs into, you know, a series. But like sometimes it doesn't. And so I think like having that kind of more top of mind of like, you know, do I want to be doing all the other stuff that might not look so fun? And in a weird and in the end, I think finding someone that you genuinely enjoy doing all that stuff with makes it really fun. So like I think I don't know, I have found parenthood with Dylan is like a blast. We're having a great time. Obviously, there are things that are still hard about it, but I feel like even the most mundane things or the most boring things people talk about, if it's someone that you genuinely enjoy doing this stuff with, I mean, you just have a really great time. So yeah. So it matters.
Dylan, on the 20-minute VC podcast, Harry Stebbings, for some reason, asked you what's most important in a partner, sex, laughter, honesty, or respect? And you chose sex.
Nice.
No, I'm just kidding. You chose honesty.
Oh, okay. I remember you honestly could have convinced me that I chose sex.
I remember I didn't like whatever your answer was. But
you ranked them.
Okay, I went honesty, then sex.
Yeah, then sex.
Yeah, then sex.
And I think humor was last. Respect and humor. And Nadia, what's your ranking?
What are the three things?
Sex, laughter, honesy, respect.
And I think I went honesty, sex, respect,
and maybe laughter. And maybe explain your rank.
Let's see. To me, honestly,
respect was last. That's why I was so weird.
Was respect last, or did I do laughter last, or maybe yeah? Okay. But it was definitely like at least honesty and sex first. And yeah, I don't think you liked that respect was like third, basically.
But then you gave me an explanation that made sense.
Yeah, I don't really remember. I think you were like,
if I can be honest with them, then I can develop the other thing.
Yeah, I think it was like, if you don't have honesty, that feels like, you know, sort of base truth where it's just like you need, you know, a common, you know, sort of ground that you're operating from. And then sex just feels like it's just so fundamental that also if you don't have that, the others like kind of don't, you know, sort of matter either. And so then it's like in some ways, it's not that respect doesn't matter, but it's like you can't really have that without the like honesty.
Well, it's a balanced honesty, right? Because you're not to your earlier point, you're not oversharing or
it's not like a total download. Yeah, it's not when you talk about every single detail about each other's lives every single day, right? It's just like, but of the things that we're communicating to one another, we always know that we're saying the truth.
Being real with each other. Yeah, I think honesty is definitely the most important one. Or just, it's not even, because I want to say communication, but it's not communication again in the sense of tell every single thing you're thinking. It's like this healthy balance of communication where some things are said, some things are implicitly understood, and you're on the right level with each other. I think being able to convey feeling to someone through body language, through intentions, and not always having to over-verbalize everything is just a really good sign.
Yeah. How do you think about, you guys obviously have shared context, shared knowledge. You're in the same industry. You have, you know, similar friend groups. There's a lot shared, but there's also a lot different, right? Like Nadia is very literary, very verbal. Dalian doesn't love to read books to the same degree.
I mean, I still love to read, just not to the same degree. Yeah, yeah. It's hard to
read. You read different things.
Yeah, you read different things.
I read about war.
Yeah.
He does read a lot about war.
You know, you're a spaceman. You know, just sort of different. There's definitely some differences there in interest, but also just how you guys sort of process the world, think about the world. And there are other people of the opposite sex who might be more similar to you. But I'm curious how you think about that balance. How should other people think about sort of similarities and differences and what's the right.
I mean, there's obviously people like, I think about like, you know, Mateo and Alex from Eight Sleep, where it's like literally they have the exact same context and they literally work together for 8 hours a day. So I don't think there's any like universal, you know, sort of answer here. At least for me, I felt like I just am so, you know, sort of, you know, work is such a top, you know, sort of priority for me that I felt like in prior relationships where I didn't have some level of like shared context and just like somebody that like knew what a Series A was going into the relationship, I was like, I'm such a foreign body and I want to be able to talk this stuff over. And so, you know, no shared context is too difficult for me. But then I also felt like, you know, there weren't an infinite number, but the handful of people that I like, you know, sort of dated or, you know, had brief flings with that were like literally another VC or another founder, I was like, oh my God, I like might as well just stay at the office all day. It's just like, then we're just like the exact same thing. Yeah. And so that just feels wrong too. So it's not that I don't think it was like explicitly searching for it when, you know, I was like, you know, looking for a partner or anything like that. But once in it, I was like, oh my God, this is like the perfect amount of context, you know, sort of overlap to have where like, yeah. you know, I feel like I'm learning a lot about things from her. She's learning about things from me, but also we like have this like shared network and understanding of, you know, technology, Silicon Valley, et cetera. And so, you know, we're not like trying to explain the basics to one another.
Yeah.
Yeah. I share that sentiment. I think from my end, I also just didn't realize how wonderful it would be to date someone that's very grounding.
Yeah.
I spend a lot of time in my head all day and a lot of time with very abstract topics. And I think if I were to spend my life with someone else who's similar, for me personally, at least, I think we would just sort of end up being in our own worlds forever. And yeah, we had this early thing of the, you were like the super soaker. Is that like an?
Oh yeah. It's like an XKCD comic where it's like, I think it's called like existential or something, but it's like, oh, she's going into an existential crisis again. Like quick, get the super soaker. It's like you pop him up and spray him with the super soaker to like bring him back to reality.
That's very much what our early relationship was like.
Yeah. I remember especially like early on, she was still working on her first book. And you know, that's even more like, you know, sometimes when you're in your research mode, you're at least like still talking to people. On those days, like she like literally like, you know, would go days at a time without like talking to anybody and just like, you know, literally writing all day. And so I would come home and she would like look at me and literally just be like nonverbal, like just like forget how to speak. And I'd be like, do you remember English, lady?
Okay, it wasn't that bad.
It was pretty bad. Yeah. And so there's definitely some amount of the, you know, you got to come back into the, you know, sort of real world. And then for me, I think I feel like a part of what I like is, you know, I come from like a family of academics and then I aspire to, I think, you know, I also really like, you know, sort of writing. I really like reading. I feel like I'm in this, you know, phase in my life where I don't get to do that as much, but it's not something that like I never want to go back to or something. Like I definitely would like to return to a life that involves more reading and more writing and more philosophizing relative to like today feels very, I need to like, you know, turn the crank. And so I feel like Nadia reminds me how beautiful that, you know, sort of world is. And I get to somewhat, you know, get to tap into it, you know, sort of, with
vicariously.
Her. Yeah.
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 I'll say, I mean, yeah, definitely the advice I give to a lot of friends who are looking for partners is I don't think if I had made a list of criteria of this is what I think I want, and it's often very surprising who you end up with. But those are, I think, some of the best relationships.
So when people in your friend groups or people, you know, when you see that they pick the wrong partner, like why does that usually happen? Or like, what is the sort of mistake that you see people make or not fully appreciate when they pick someone too like them?
It comes back to this like respect and communication thing again.
And commitment. Like it's like when somebody's like 3 years in and it's not obvious like one of or both people are not like fully committed to one another, I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, why are you still in this thing where clearly 3 years in there's like wavering on one side or on both sides? It's like this just like is not the secure. Like,
how long did it take for you to know? Was it like 6 months? Three
on
months?
Like the like wavering?
Yeah. Or like we're gonna do this.
Yeah, I'm not. Let's see. Was there like an immediate moment? I still kind of go back to like.
Well, you moved
like,
in together. I mean,
yeah.
6 months.
But I could also see a world where like, you know, if like we lived in a city where like housing costs were like 3x lower, like there was definitely a component of it that was like, it was just like annoying Ubering back and forth, et cetera. But if we lived in like Kansas City, who knows? Right. Maybe like it would have been, you know, a little bit later. I don't know. I feel like it's like the proposal thing is always like the easiest thing to like, you know, sort of point to. Because obviously like by then, yes. And then obviously when we like literally went on our first date.
Right.
The transition, I don't think it was like a binary like point.
A year and a half, I want to say.
But yeah, what separated Delian for you, Nadia, based on other people you've dated in the past, was just the sort of level of commitment, right?
Yeah, commitment and seriousness. And then communication. Yeah. And seriousness goes a long way, I think. Yeah.
And the communication, you mean the not over communication or you mean the.
No, I need a better term for this. But yeah, just being direct. Like I never worry that Dylan is keeping a thought in his head that he's not telling.
Oh, yeah. I was like frustrated by things early on in the relationship, but I would just tell her like, this can't happen. Like, I don't want to date somebody that does this. So like, if this is a thing you want to do, go for it. But like, it's not going to be like with me.
And then I realized it was actually just such a huge relief to be like.
Including like the boyfriend, girlfriend thing. Yeah. I was like, I get you're coming from this San Francisco world where like things are vague. That is not what I do. And so if you want this thing to continue, it like has to be concrete. And like, you know, I think I literally basically like set a deadline effectively where I was like, I think it was actually like the Easter like brunch with my mom, where it was like maybe 3 or 4 weeks into dating. And I was like, you can come to the brunch, but like only if I'm presenting you as my girlfriend. Otherwise you're not coming to the brunch, obviously.
Right. Yeah, it is interesting. So sometimes in a relationship, there's one person who's like has more thoughts about the relationship or more concerns. And maybe they just need to calibrate so that it's not like, you know, one person is always, is that so, kind of what happens here a little bit? Like if Delian has a thought, he shares it, but you tend to have more thoughts on this kind of thing. So you're like more discerning as to what you share.
I think yeah, I don't feel like I keep things in now, but I think I really did learn a lot from being with Delian in that like he was so candid and so direct that it felt like it gave me the space to, well, if he's super direct, then I could be super direct too.
Yeah.
And it was just such a relief because I never worry that, oh, he's just sitting there being resentful about something. It's like, right, if he's mad about something, he'll know it and vice versa.
So it's just that discernment when something is truly worth bringing up, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's like pick your, because I think it's, again, if you're trying to reach this, if the bar is that you're like day to day should just be awesome with this person all the time. And totally. It's like, okay, do you really
it should
wanna
be awesome, but it doesn't have to be perfect. And I think too many people are like trying to overanalyze and dig into, like, it's not that Nadia and I's like, you know, interactions on a day by day basis are like perfectly seamless all the time. It's like, if we're like underslept or stressed out, or we like just came off a 6-hour flight, or like, you know, things are going, it's like, it's not always perfect. Like she'll snap at me or I'll yell, you know, get mad, or like, you know, there's things that happen, but it's like, it's not like we go and like perfectly overanalyze, oh, like, why did that happen? How do we prevent this from happening in the future? It's like, no. But like, you also want to make sure that like at the end of the day, you felt like it was an awesome experience,
right?
Even if there's like minor perturbations all throughout, like sit there and like overanalyze the perturbation. And I feel like that's also something that I've like had to, I think it's been a lot easier to learn being married to somebody for like such an extended period of time, where there were times early on where I'd be like, oh shit, like, you know, Nadia clearly was like super mad about this thing, etc., and like I needed to think about this, because I also like would have these girlfriends in San Francisco that would like want things to be perfect and overanalyzed, etc., and then we would like have these like 6-hour long discussions about like a thing that I did like 2 Sundays prior.
Yeah,
and I felt like that wasn't the case with Nadia, because then like it would just be like, yeah, like she was kind of in a bad mood that day and I said some stupid things. And it's, we don't need to like go back and like think about that nonstop. It's
the ability,
you know,
to let go and move on.
Yeah.
And like trust that people are like, just trying to get better at stuff.
Exactly.
And so the way you guys bounce back when you snap or so is just like, sorry, and just like move on, basically, like short memories. Like,
yeah, we'll acknowledge it sometimes. Like later in the day, we're just like, we're calm, just like, oh man, I can't believe, like, and like, yeah, be able to laugh at yourself a little bit. And also, yeah, sometimes recognize there are times when one of us might snap at the other, but it's, you know, look at the context of maybe this person's tired or stressed or whatever. Yeah. And it's like really starting to get to know the other person, where you're understanding them in this very detailed way, so that it doesn't just feel like, oh, you got mad at me and now I'm going to call the getting mad at me police and issue you a violation. It's like, he's a human being and sometimes he gets tired and vice versa. And yeah, just be able to like get past that.
Yeah, often I've definitely succumbed to this too. There's this sort of desire to be like, how can this never happen again? Like, we need to have like a system.
But it's going to.
I think it's just like totally unrealistic. It's like, yeah, of course it's going to. It's just like, you know, like in the grand scheme of the trade of the world.
Right.
Do you still feel awesome about this relationship? It's not to say that like it's going to have like zero blemishes, you know, somehow.
And it's not to say that one shouldn't accept it happening all the time or something, but within reason.
Exactly.
And so what do you guys fight about? Or when you, maybe, I wonder if parenting has brought up new challenges.
I think it's always varied. Like, I don't think there's like any, like, I think if there was like one consistent theme over and over and over again, I feel like that would, you know, sort of make it, you know, sort of not work as much. I mean, you know, sort of, I think two of the more, you know, sort of recent ones, the first one I know you're going to be comfortable with, the second one maybe we, you know, can cut out or whatever, but the first one is just like travel schedule and balancing childcare stuff. Like, I think, you know, that especially this fall, like, you know, sort of got to a place that just like clearly didn't, you know, sort of feel sustainable. So that was one of the more, you know, sort of recent ones. And obviously, you know, doing some life adjustments to, you know, sort of change that.
That's what I was going to say. I think parenting just brings up a lot of really boring, treacherous logistics stuff you have to deal with now. Like, I remember feeling this moment of panic when we had a kid and then realizing, oh my gosh, like my schedule is now perfectly tied to this other, like to Delian's schedule, where one of us needs to be taken care of, you know. So in the evenings, it's not, I think we both, we had a pretty independent relationship, and we still do in a lot of ways, where it's not like we're spending every evening side by side doing things together or whatever. We often do separate
things. Her mom finds it so funny that we'll both order our own delivery, you know, sort of food from separate places and then have dinner completely separately. And there's no discussion.
It's like, we both like our, you know, people often, I think, don't know this about it, but like, I don't know. Yeah. You like your downtime. You like your, you spend a lot of time with people, but you also enjoy just like all heads down a little bit at home. And I'm always down to be alone. so yeah, I think we definitely have our own space and our own independent schedules. But then when you have a kid, it's not like, oh, I'm going to go off and do this thing this weekend and I'll see you later. It's, well, if I'm leaving, then someone else needs to be here. And that was scary at first of just, now we have to coordinate everything. I don't know if I would call it a fight or anything. I think I'd just say like, it just.
The travel one was more of the, yeah, sort of
fight. I wouldn't even call it a fight though. It's just more like functionally, it's really hard. Like there's.
Yeah. You were mad at me.
And how do you deal with sort of divide and conquer equality? I remember you telling me something along the lines of like, you had to accept that not everything's going to be equal all the time. Like, something's not going to be like the cleanest or, you know, person in the world or something.
Just a dirty, dirty man over here.
Or do the most housework.
I was supposed to be a dirty old grandpa.
Well, these are some of the things that would just.
I can't wait for that.
some things that. Oh, just like letting go of things. I mean, yeah, one thing when we moved in together was Dylan is very messy. incredibly messy, adorably messy, Shocker. But like very messy. And I'm not a clean freak, but I'm definitely tidy. I'm not like, you know, whatever. Yeah. I'm definitely, yeah. But, you know, I'm just a normal person.
You've got standards.
Yeah, I have standards. Yeah. And that's the kind of thing where you have to decide, you know, am I going to be miserable? If I like this person, I want to live with them. It's either it has to be a complete deal breaker. We can't date anymore because we can't live together. Or I'm going to be running around picking up after him all the time. That would be very annoying. Or just, you know, you sort of accept on both sides. There's some things where Dylan knows to like pick up after himself. And some things where like sometimes the mess sits out there. And if I had my way, I would love to pick it up and clean it. But it's people have different personalities and you know, it really just doesn't matter that much in the end. And I'm just harmonious about it, you know.
You're hormonal, you said? I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Harmonious.
Yes.
How do you guys deal with that? I'm just kidding.
Wood.
Stop.
I'm just kidding.
I think parenting introduces a lot of logistics and it's very easy to then just have your life be logistics and coordinating, and that also takes the joy out of a relationship really fast. And I think being cognizant of, I try to at least be aware of, you know, let's make sure we're not constantly talking about the baby and logistics, and there are other things that we can, you know, really being active and looking for those moments of joy and other ways to connect. Because I think that that can be a place where it starts to really impact someone's relationship, where suddenly you get a year in or something, you realize all we ever do is talk logistics and we never do anything joyful for ourselves.
But Dylan, you've talked about how young men should have kids or sooner than they think. Say more about that.
Yeah, but I was actually meaning to you know, sort of write something now that my sort of son's a year old. Not that I have like some super strong perspective on like parenthood yet, given that I obviously sort of have a long path ahead of me. But I'd been thinking about it in relation to seeing other people who have had kids at, you know, sort of different, you know, sort of stages of life. And I think one thing that I've really appreciated over the past year is it's obviously been the most joyful year for me as like a father and getting to experience this like wonderful human being that I hope I get to, you know, sort of, you know, have in my life for, you know, as long as I live. And at the same time, it was also a year that was like amongst the most stressful and biggest inflection points for me, you know, sort of professionally. You know, when my son was born, the Varda, you know, the office that we're currently in, the Varda capsule was, you know, sort of still in space. When he was, you know, whatever, 2.5 months old was when we were going through our, you know, sort of first reentry. There was so much that was like so important for me, you know, sort of professionally over the past year. But what I really appreciated was that I felt like I was like, my career is growing at the same time that he is growing. And so it kind of feels like it's in tandem where, you know, I think I do my best to really prioritize spending time with him. I try to come home for dinner every, you know, single night. I try to, you know, spend whenever I'm in the same city as him, I'm out traveling, spend as much time as I, you know, sort of possibly can. At the same time, I also, you know, have two jobs that are, you know, sort of, you know, highly ambitious. And I also spend a lot of time, you know, sort of working on those. And I feel like being in this world where, you know, everything ultimately, you know, comes as a trade-off feels in some ways like a, you know, sort of healthy, you know, sort of balance. Versus I feel like when I see people, and this isn't, you know, sort of everyone, but when I see people think about only having kids once they're, you know, sort of past the peak of their career, you get into this weird dynamic where like the kid is growing, but your career is sort of like not falling per se, but like you're no longer in this like super intense, you know, sort of grind mode. And then I feel like I see them get into this like sort of guilt where it's like, well, now you're wealthy enough that you can just go home at like 2 p.m. and spend the next, you know, sort of 5 hours with him when they're like 2 years old. And I'm not saying that has like, you know, sort of zero value for the kid or anything, but you get into this weird state where it just feels like things are sort of decoupled from one another, where like the, you know, sort of kids kids' life stages and your life stages no longer really, you know, sort of seemed online. And so I feel like this is the thing that people get really wrong, where they really think about, oh, like, you know, I don't want to have kids until I'm older, when like I can just use like, you know, sort of wealth, et cetera, to make it a lot easier and I can spend more time with them. And I'm like, no, part of the joy of being like a, you know, sort of father is that you get to grow at the same time as your kid is, you know, sort of growing. So you can't have somewhat of like parallel, you know, sort of experiences. And if you get too decoupled from that, I think, you know, you just don't have that same connection with your kid. And then I think there's a part of it that is also, you know, people underappreciate how important also like the grandparent experience is. And for each year that you delay, you know, basically having a kid, you know, if your kid has the same has kids at the same age as you, you're delaying grandparents by like 2 years. So, you know, if you're, you know, 30 when you have your first kid, hopefully you're, you know, sort of grandparents, you know, when you're 60. If you wait till 35, 70, if you wait till 40, 80, at some point you're like really limiting the amount of like healthy years you have with your, you know, sort of grandparents, with your grandkids. One thing that I love about, you know, sort of our son is he currently has multiple great grandparents alive that like get to interact with him and have rich, you know, sort of filling great lives with him. Great grandparents, multiple of them. He also obviously has a multitude of grandparents that are all quite young, energetic, healthy, et cetera. And a part of that is because my parents had kids when they were young. I had kids, again, relatively, you know, sort of young, quote unquote, you know, 30, you know, obviously in certain cultures is young, certain cultures is old. And so I feel like there's a part of it that is that, where it's like, man, you're really depriving both your parents from the grandparent experience with your kids, but then also you're depriving your future self from the grandparent experience, you know, by, you know, sort of waiting too late. And so there's all these things that I feel like society has gotten perverted, in particular over the past, you know, sort of decade, and especially in like right wing, red pill, manosphere, Andrew Tate, you know, sort of type, you know, sort of culture that I just think really does you discredit for what the purpose of life is and some of the most joyous aspects, you know, sort of life that you completely end up missing out on.
Right. Well, yeah, so I think for some people they're cautious because they saw their parents get divorced or, you know, maybe not have the right partner.
My parents got divorced. You know what I mean? Yeah. Where it's like, yeah, it's like, okay, if that's like the worst case outcome, they still had like, you know, 18 years of marriage together, three kids. Yeah. Like they still have a really strong, you know, sort of familial bond where it's like, look, do my parents love each other, you know, anymore? Or can they even like really tolerate each other? Not really that much. But like, we'll still get together as a full family. And like, they're not going to like sit next to each other at the dinner table, but like we still get to have like the full family together. And to me, it's like, that's the downside case of like, if you choose the, you know, sort of wrong partner, it's like, it's a pretty damn good upside case relative to like, you know, you don't even get to be alive for your grandkids. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, you know, if I had to, you know, sort of choose between those two extremes. So, I do think, yeah, there's a part of me that like, I felt like I grew up with this, like, you know, sort of expectation that, kids were an incredibly important part of, you know, sort of growing up and being an adult. It wasn't that you like became a super old adult and then had kids. It was like a part of becoming an adult was, you know, sort of having the kids. And so I felt like I was in this state where like, I kind of, you know, sort of dated people from like 16 to 21 or so. And then at some point I was like, I don't want to keep doing that where I'm like experimenting whoever the next person is that like I'm going to like seriously, you know, sort of date for an extended period of time. I want this to be the person like I actually, you know, to have kids with. And so I like raised the bar to the level where I was like, yeah, there are people that I enjoy, you know, having short flings with, but I always made it very clear with them. I was like, you are not, at the level or what I want for somebody that I'm marrying. So this is never going to become, you know, sort of thing, especially because I cared a lot about that. Like, you know, sort of, you know, if you're going to take somebody on dates, they should be, you know, sort of your girlfriend.
At the same time, you also think that we shouldn't, or you both think that we shouldn't pressure or add to the pressure that women have to have kids early, right?
Yeah, I mean, I just think there's a very wide gap between what we're talking about when we're saying prioritize kids. You know, I feel like the conversation turns into, should you have kids when you're 22 versus 42? And it's like, there's a huge range in between.
Right.
And I think like, yeah, I mean, my side of it is, having kids, I'm not gonna lie, like it really does change the amount of free time that you have. And a lot of that work, statistically, historically, just factually, it falls on women for many, many reasons. Some of them are just physical reasons. Pregnancy is a thing that, you know, the woman is doing. But also a lot of childcare falls on women and it really changes your life. I don't have the same amount of free time I used to. I've had to make some pretty tough trade-offs this past year because I just don't have the headspace that I used to. So there are sacrifices involved. And I think, I think on the women's side, like it does make sense to spend a little bit of time figuring out what you like, living life. I think women are also just, maybe not all women, but for me, like I was not ready to have kids when I was, let's even say like 25 and stuff. Maybe some women are, that's great for them. For me, like I had a lot of just soul searching, finding myself to do. I think a lot of women are like just more emotionally
mature.
I was gonna say, I'm trying to find the right phrase, but it's, you know, I think just a lot more emotionally expressive, and that comes in good and bad ways, right? Like, we know that, like, teenage girls, for example, are much more susceptible to social media than boys are. And I think part of it is you're just, like, you know, you're a lot more just in your head and in tune with your emotions. And sometimes that means you're hyper aware of things that you aren't always. And so for me, at least, I felt like I needed some time to just, like, figure out who I am. And then I felt ready. And now that I'm having kids, it's like I have zero regrets for it. I feel like I had a really, really full life before my kids. And now I can shift my priorities a little bit and focus. But yeah, I think, like, we can't ignore that is true. And I think for millennial women like me, we were all kind of raised being told you can, you know, do it all. And as soon as I had kids, I realized I already kind of suspected it before, but you really, really feel it. It's just, you know, I don't have evenings and weekends anymore to work. So yeah, there are trade-offs. I think the trade-offs are all super, super worth it. It's also been the best year of my life.
Have you, some people, younger women get scared that having a kid kind of rewires their brain and thus they'll care less about their career and more about their kid. And I'm sure there's some excitement that comes with that, but they're also, like, really excited about their career. They spend their whole, you know, 20s doing
it. Tough.
Is that confirmed?
I don't know that I don't know if it's,
or what you see in your peer groups,
everyone,
or,
but I think it's been a mix. I think there's some women I know who didn't love their careers anyway. And so this gave them something else to focus on. I also know a lot of women, myself included, where it's like, I love my kid. I don't want to spend 24/7 on childcare. I just don't. And then it just becomes this really painful trade-off of how do you figure out how to balance both those things? But yeah, I think, like, we have to at least just start being realistic about what some of those trade-offs are. And we can't just pretend that they don't exist, because then you end up for a very rude awakening.
Totally. So men should have kids young, women should wait. So it sounds like men should date older women and marry older women.
Have
kids with them. That's what feels like the takeaways. Is there anything we haven't yet discussed or things that come to mind about either your relationship specifically or things you advise your friends or people, whether they're at similar stages or sort of, you know, well before, about either partner selection or making relationships great or thinking about kids and parenting?
I'm curious, why did you want to do this whole podcast series, and what are you hoping to get out of it by talking to all these couples?
Well, one, I just thought it would be fun on its own. Two, I think it's just underexplored. I haven't seen a lot of couples kind of be open about things that they sort of struggle with. I think partner selection is still, like, we don't really have a great way of thinking about that. And I think people learn from, like, case studies, and I think there aren't tons. So I think my own curiosity, and I hope that other people see examples that they can aspire to or learn from in some way. One thing you mentioned is, like, this idea that no person can satisfy, like, every part of, or can be, like, the best friend in every single dimension. And one thing you mentioned, Nadia, is, like, because you're different in certain ways, it also, like, reminds you, or it's also important to have friends who do have, you know, the same interest in certain things. Or, like, how do you think about just, like, a full life's, you know, when you think about, like, what your partner satisfied, what you can expect from your partner relative to what you need to satisfy yourself or via other means?
Yeah, it has changed, I think, since having a kid, where our inner, or I don't know what the term is, our relationship world has expanded a lot. Our household is its own world in itself now, in a way that I think it wasn't before kids. There's so many things that are going on in our household. There are little victories we're celebrating, little issues that come up, whatever, that are centered more around us as a family unit. We haven't had a second kid yet, but I have heard from people who have two kids where it's like, oh, now we really feel like a family, like we are our own unit of thing. So I think that also changes how I think about, yeah, sort of like where the center of my attention is these days. But I do think, yeah, friends are, and we were talking about this recently, just like, I don't know, the longtime friendships you have, you start to really, really, they start to really deepen and ground you and hold you. Because they're people, I think people who have known you for a really, really long time just help keep the time. You help keep the time for each other. And that becomes really important. Having people to talk about things you find interesting that are outside of your relationship are isn't important, but I think, yeah, I think I think less about it right now just because I feel more in like my domestic world has just expanded a lot right now. I'm sure that will change over time though.
To feel like the goal of life, to me, I feel like, you know, like having that domestic world, maybe to like take the extreme version, it's like the epitome of like a family life being its whole own story is like Succession, you know what I mean? Where it's like, like there are obviously crazy parts of that, you know, sort of family and things that are super dark, et cetera. But there's a part of it that's like, look at like the family, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like they are constantly with each other, thinking about each other, spending time together, et cetera. That to me is like, you know, sort of what, you know, life is all about. And I feel like in some ways, you know, both of us, because we come from these immigrant families, just don't have that type of, you know, sort of, you know, background. I think my family's done a decent job of attempting to, you know, sort of create that. But again, my nuclear family that's here in the United States is like, you know, five of us, basically six of us, you know, seven of us. It's still, you know, sort of relatively small, but I feel like the thing that I always like, you know, sort of dream about, and the thing that is like in some ways my like top priority in life is like, I want there one day to be the like Asperoha Thanksgiving. And there's like 30, there's like 40. And like, that is actually like the main thing that I think about, you know, sort of in life. And so I love the fact that like the main thing that I think about is like these, like, you know, sort of domestic, whatever, you know, sort of story that is like its own, you know, sort of being. And I feel like that's the thing that is like the institution that you're sort of building, the like, you know, sort of legacy, you know, in some ways that like is way, way more important than any of the like the purpose of building the companies and the things that you're doing. Is I honestly believe, like, you know, not to get overly like, you know, sort of nepotistical or back to like you know, a love of what is not oligarchy, but what's the word for like
dynasty,
like rich people in England,
aristocratic.
The aristocratic. Not to get too back into like an aristocracy, but I actually think that this is something where we've somewhat lost our way. And I saw a great, you know, sort of thread on this today, where like as society has shifted from this like valuation of people based off the like productivity of their assets, where it's like how much can the farm generate, to instead the like value of the underlying asset. The default is the only way to realize that is you have to like sell off a part of it. And so you have, you know, they like, you know, sort of track this in England, where if you look at the families that in like the early 1900s, once like land had value and was more tradable, started to actually trade parts of it. Those like dynasties and those families completely went away. The ones that stayed very conservative and held on to like everything that they had, those families are still strong families. And so I think it's something that's like lacking in today's culture is like this thinking of like the institutions that you're establishing that are meant to, you know, sort of last for the next year, sort of 100, you know, sort of years. It's like the, you know, Tudor family or the, you know, XYZ family. It's like those are the things that we should be like thinking about building that I think can have lasting impact. And there's part of this that for me is also, you know, sort of related to, you know, sort of exploration. I think the only, you know, sort of reason we're able to have this type of very short-term thinking capitalistic culture versus long-term thinking is because we are all on this planet. The moment that you start to get into like, we're actually starting to explore the solar system, et cetera, all that stuff totally breaks down. Like you need to have extreme long-term commitment, long-term thinking, et cetera. The moment you're trying to like establish something like a base on the moon, you immediately are reverting back to like, you know, 1500s English aristocracy in order for that to have any modicum of success. And so.
I was with you till the end. But you know, that's your little touch on it. But yeah, I was sitting here trying to find like a nice way of saying this, and you just said it so much more eloquently than or directly than I think what I was trying to get at, which is I think like something I just it's like raising a family is fun, building a domestic world is fun, and
building an aristocracy,
whatever you want to call
make
it,
make aristocracy great again. Household.
It's and sometimes I hear people talk about I don't know, like raising family, it sounds so drudgerous, and it's. Yeah. And even I think before I had kids, and then I would have friends who had kids, and they would sort of like disappear a little bit. And I was like, oh, you know, they left me. They're not, you know, we're not really friends anymore. They're just like lost in their own little world or whatever. And now I'm like, they're busy doing this really important thing. That's actually just, it's genuinely really like for me, most nights I am just thrilled to come home to my kid and spend time with my kid. Like that's what I want to be doing more than anything else. I don't know. It doesn't have to feel like a sacrifice. There are a lot of things that change. Yeah.
It also just reminds you though the importance of like the long term friends, where it's like the moment that a trade off becomes like I'm either with my kid or I'm with this person, all of a sudden the bar elevates to like, well, why would I want to be with anybody other than somebody that is basically the equivalent of like, you know, sort of family member? And so in some ways like the circle tightens, but then it felt like it like re-elevated people that were like always family, but as we'd be spending time with a broader set of people, and then when you narrow it, you're like, actually these are the only relationships that matter. Why am I spending time time with literally, you know, anybody else outside of like a professional capacity. Yeah.
It does seem, Nadia, like you've done a good job of like before having a kid, your sort of identity of like writer, you know, researcher, and post having a kid, you're a mother, but you haven't like entirely lost sort of the previous identity. And you also haven't like, but you've also, you just added mother. It feels like you have had a pretty good balance. Is that fair to say?
I mean, I'm glad it seems that way. Yeah, I think there are a lot of trade-offs. And yeah, I don't really know how to articulate it in a way that doesn't sound depressing or scary to someone. But I think becoming a mother is a process of death of self or losing yourself in a way that things change for fathers, but I don't think it's the same as with mothers. I'm still trying to figure out what that all means, but yeah, there's definitely like a death of self that had to happen.
Right. But it's also your 1 year old is different than like when the kid is like five or something.
Yeah. Right. I mean, the long term, like everything.
Yeah, there are just phases of life.
There's just phases of life. I think that's where I kind of find peace with it, is it's not that one is better or worse than the other. Yeah. But something we talk about sometimes too with work and versus childcare balance is, I think like it would be nice if there were more support for people to sort of not be at 100% or zero, where it's, you know, can I be at 100% all the time the way I was before? No, frankly, no. That doesn't mean I'm at zero. It means you can be at like 60% or 80% or whatever. And I think finding ways to sort of, it doesn't have to be this, oh no, life is so busy now at home that I simply cannot do anything. It's like, no, I will do things, but I have to do things with a different set of constraints and different pace. So yeah, you don't lose everything. You just, stuff just adapts and changes.
Yeah. And one thing about you guys is it seems like you married, you said earlier, you don't want to have kids when you're like past your peak or whatever. You guys married sort of on the come up, like you hadn't even started the company yet, but it means that you have to be comfortable, not just who the person is when you first start dating, but who they evolve into and who they grow into. And it seems like you've both picked up sort of, you know, your lifestyle drastically changed when you got into, you know, when you started Varda. You know, you've developed some new interests, like Jonas as an example. Not that I'm not implying you're, you know, a super, full-time meditator.
It is always very funny to have a wife that's like super into Jonas as like the opposite of woo-woo.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's very funny juxtaposition.
You know that no matter in what ways in which you change and grow, that you'll sort of grow together and have each other's support.
And that goes back again to the commitment thing.
Yeah,
I don't know.
We're still
locked in prison together.
There's a part of me that's like, the shape of the prison is still the same. Nothing's changed.
Yeah. Make it sound so romantic.
It's quite nice in here.
Yeah. Well, maybe lastly, and you can skip this one if you want to, but maybe lastly, what you guys are both fairly well known. What do you think people don't fully appreciate or misinterpret or not fully get about the other?
Her written communication is far, far better than her verbal communication.
I mean, true.
If you expect to encounter the same person when you're in person with her that you read, it is not the case.
I mean, that's also true for you in a very different sort of way. I mean, my go-to is always that Dalian is a softie and people don't realize.
Yeah.
Based on his
You told me once that someone brought you aside was like, I'm so sorry or something. Like, people just say weird
things.
It's
happened many, many times.
Like, is everything okay?
They staged an intervention.
He
tamed the beast. No, I'm just kidding.
Dalian's a very loyal friend and husband he's actually.
Does he cry? Is he a softie?
He's much not more of a lover. He cries at space movies.
Oh, sure. Cries space movies.
But yeah, he's much more of a lover than a fighter.
He cries of beauty.
Yeah. That's true. I only fight for the love.
It's true.
And most of the times that I'm like posting something that's like angry on Twitter, I'm just giggling.
You're like, look, not my, look how viral this thing went.
She always goes, oh no.
Story of our life. Yeah. What did you do now?
I only fight for the love. I mean, maybe we should wrap on that. I mean, it is, it's amazing to see what you guys have built together over the years.
Make marriage great again.
Yeah. Thank you for coming on and sharing your learnings with us.
Thanks, Eric.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for listening to Modern Relationships. Please make sure you're following on Apple, Spotify, or YouTube. If you have a chance, leave us a review or comment on this episode to let me know who else you'd like to hear from on this show.
Modern Relationships is a podcast from Turpentine, the network behind Econ 102, Upstream, and Turpentine VC.